Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Severe weather in Michigan has killed at least five people and left thousands without power. Wayne County CEO Warren C. Evans says now comes the cleanup.
The county ought to declare a state of emergency, which should, first of all, indicate the severity of the problems that we saw, but also will help us with requests to the state and to FEMA for disaster relief.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer activated the State Emergency Operations Center last night. Texas has its own problems weather-wise. Excessive heat means rolling blackouts may be necessary.
All Texans are being asked to conserve energy. It's the second request this week from ERCOT, the state's power grid operator. A combination of high peak load, extreme unplanned outages, and extreme low wind would trigger 15 to 45 minute rolling blackouts throughout the state. Record power demand is expected. The state has also had issues with thermal operators going down this week, and low wind is in the forecast.
That's reporter Chris Fox in Austin. Here's the good news. Inflation is going down. But Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says it may not be going down enough.
2 months of good data are only the beginning of what it will take to build confidence that inflation is moving down sustainably toward our goal. We can't yet know the extent to which these lower readings will continue, or where underlying inflation will settle over coming quarters.
Powell was speaking at the annual Central Bankers meeting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. COVID numbers are ticking up nationwide, and so are hospitalizations. CBS's Michael George has that story.
Updated COVID boosters will be available mid-September once the FDA signs off and the CDC sets eligibility guidelines. The annual flu shot is out now and best taken in October. You can get both at the same time. Experts say if you do test positive for COVID, the best practice still stands. The CDC expects this trending uptick to continue into the fall.
The government will not provide the upcoming COVID boosters for free, although most insurance plans are required to cover the full cost of the vaccines without copays. The Spanish women's national team is protesting. Here's reporter Ben Jacobs.
81 female soccer players, including Spain's entire Women's World Cup winning squad, have signed a joint statement refusing to play until the Spanish Football Association president, Luis Rubiales, is removed.
Rubiales kissed player Jenny Hermoso on the lips after Spain's World Cup victory. He claimed it was mutual and with consent. She says it was not. This is CBS News.
At Staples, school savings are always in session. From art supplies and essentials to the latest tech, in stock and priced low. School on, save on at your local Staples store.
Ask Sherwin-Williams and get 35% off Emerald products and SuperDeck stains August 25th through the 28th. That means 35% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 35% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack, but not with ZipRecruiter. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists in their own words.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Monday, August 28th. In Wood County, the Wisconsin Rapids School District All Staff In-Service will take place from 8 a.m. to 11:30 at the Performing Arts Center at Lincoln High School. The Board of Education members are invited to attend the annual WRPS in-service event. In Portage County, the City of Stevens Point Transportation Commission meeting will begin at 4:45 at Central Transportation. They will be electing the vice chairperson, voting to approve extending hour-long fixed routes yellow and red by 1 hour, and approving waiving fares for youth age 17 and under on fixed routes, among other agenda items. The Portage County Judicial General Government Committee will meet at 5:30 at the Portage County Annex in Conference Room 5. In Adams County, the County Board Retreat will take place from 5 to 7 p.m. at Adams County Peatonwell Park. I'm Alyssa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight, otherwise partly cloudy skies. Lows level off around 58, winds out of the north 5 to 10 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 75, tomorrow cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Clear skies, tomorrow night lows dip down to about 48. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 85.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this August 25th, 2023. I have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in Craig Roran, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent. Looking forward to talking with Craig. Right now, our good friend Jennifer Clark, Community Health Educator with the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Central Wisconsin, with us. Hey, Jennifer, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Thanks for being here. Yeah, I do the same thing. That's why I'm saying hi now, because I can't seem to get it right. I keep saying good morning and everything, because when we record this, of course. But we appreciate you being here in the afternoon and to hear what Jennifer has to say, because we have some really important stuff to talk about today. Whenever you guys join us, I feel like we get the chance to take our time and focus on a topic that tends to be a little bit in the gray area, or just doesn't get necessarily the attention it deserves.
Yep.
And we're going to do that a bit today, and we're going to start with falls.
Yeah, falls and falls prevention is a huge, huge thing.
Jennifer, can we get some statistics on how, you know, because certainly this is something I think that a lot of people do and realize it is a serious situation. Mm-hmm. But it really, you know, when you hear these stats, I think it really brings it home for people and makes it like, oh, I didn't realize it was that serious.
Yeah.
Or that.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't realize this, but Wisconsin's actually ranked number one in the nation for fall-related deaths in individuals aged 65 plus. So that's just huge
that,
in and of itself.
In the nation.
In the nation.
That's staggering.
Yeah. So 25.7% of adults aged 65 plus in Wisconsin fall every year. And the cost of falls is huge. It's $50 billion per year spent on non-fatal falls and $754 million per year on fatal falls. So just it's such a big issue.
And I appreciate hearing those two those sets of numbers together, mm-hmm. because I think you're hitting a lot of range of people that, you know, that may not be paying attention or may not care that much. When you hit on this being number one in the nation, that's going to get a lot of people.
Right.
But some others, if anything, bringing up the income, the economics of this,
right.
and how important that part of this is. I don't think we think about that in falls really very often.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is some other? Are there some other stats there with you?
No, those are ones that I kind of pulled for today. But I mean, certainly there's lots out there if you look on falls and falls prevention. It's
I think one of the first questions that comes to mind, though, is, well, why Wisconsin? Why would Wisconsin be the first in the nation with this?
Yeah, I actually get that question a lot. And although there's nothing really confirmed, I do have some ideas, and I'm sure others kind of share these ideas as well, is, you know, one of the things, and as an Aging and Disability Resource Center, we're focused on keeping older people in their homes, adults with disabilities in their homes, in the communities longer. So, you know, obviously people are managing chronic conditions at home longer. They're, you know, maybe not getting out like they would be, losing strength and balance, or, you know, managing those medications due to those chronic conditions. So just keeping people in their homes longer, which is a good thing. but essentially they're doing those things from home more frequently.
Yeah.
You know, lack of funding for services, lack of caregivers is always an issue too. Our winter weather plays a huge role in falls. You know, we run a Stepping on Falls prevention program, which I'll talk about in a little bit here, but you know, we tend to hear a lot of people that have fallen in the winter months just out on the ice and the snow. Alcohol use is huge in Wisconsin. So, you know, anytime that, you know, we're using alcohol, there's that risk of falls too. So obesity and lack of exercise too is another one.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to be more sedentary. Mm-hmm. So getting out and getting some exercise, multiple medications. So we tend to see in Wisconsin higher rates of chronic health conditions. Mm-hmm. So with that obviously comes more medications that we're doing, that we're taking in order to manage those conditions. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, those are just my theories in terms of why Wisconsin is, all of those things probably play a role at some level.
Like a lot of things in life, it's usually not just one thing. It's a combination of things that really lead to this.
Yep.
Are falls manufactural? I think that's another thing that kind of comes to mind for people.
Mm-hmm. So they are, falls are actually
multifactorial.
Yeah. So there's a ton of reasons why people fall, and oftentimes it's not just one reason, right? Like someone might, you know, experience a lack of strength and balance, but they also might be on some medications that are causing some dizziness. So oftentimes when a fall happens, we see that there's multiple reasons why that's happening.
Yeah.
And so there's actually, research actually shows that there are really five top reasons why people fall. Number one by far is just a lack of exercise and mobility. Mm-hmm. So that inability to either get out and exercise, or that choice that we're making to not stay active.
Yeah.
Multiple medications is another top reason. Again, kind of connecting back to those chronic health conditions. Footwear, which is interesting to me. Footwear is a bigger issue than we think. You know, those slippers that we keep in our closet that we've had for years and years and years and never replace, or summer months, I think of like all the sandals and flip-flops and things that people wear.
So here's just to piggyback on that, because I agree with you a whole heart, and I think this is one of those gray areas where we do need to put the spotlight on a little bit more, because I know so many of my good friends and people that I've grown up with out here that I love and care for that will wear those same slippers or those slip-ons on ice or in snow. I'm just going out to get the mail, or I'm just going out. I'm a Wisconsinite. I've walked in this my whole life. And then they go out there in those shoes and slip and fall.
Yes.
My mom and dad recently, both back-to-back weeks, had hip surgery.
Okay.
And one of the things that I found interesting about their physical therapy, and one of the things that they were telling them about keeping that hip, getting it better, getting it stronger, and not having to come back for another surgery, is the footwear.
Yeah.
And how important that plays a part. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of us really thought about that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And we hear that same story all the time in our stepping on programs is, I just quick slid my slippers on to head out to the mailbox to grab the mail, but we're not really thinking about, you know, like the ice on the driveway all of the things that, So footwear is definitely a big one. Vision. You would not believe how many times I've talked to people that aren't getting regular vision checks, even if they have glasses or, you know, so making sure that we're getting in for those yearly vision checks, because there are a lot of eye-related conditions as people age, and we see out of our eyes every day, so we're not always... you know, we don't always realize that there's an issue.
Yeah,
So that makes sense.
Well, it's the closest comparison I can think of is if you have a child and you don't necessarily see the growth, but your relative that sees them once a month or whatever, they see it.
Yep.
You're literally too close to it when it comes to your eyes.
Yep.
You're so used to this slow fade that has happened that you don't notice it. It's others that tend to notice that for you.
Or even just like people, I just think of like glaucoma, cataracts, you know, some of those eye related conditions that can get worse over time. So if we're not getting those regular vision checks, you know, how that can play a role as well.
Are there things that we can do to reduce our risks of falls?
Yeah, I would say, again, kind of going back to that number one, just keeping active. And this doesn't mean that you need to devote an hour to exercise each day. But what it means is maybe doing something simple, you know, doing some sit to stands from your chair as you're watching TV at night, incorporating some side leg lifts before you get out of bed in the morning. So there's just some simple things that don't require a lot of time, things that we can work into our daily habits and routines that that can be really helpful.
A workout doesn't have to mean like, you know, getting to the gym and pumping weights.
Right.
Especially the older you get, so much of a good workout is just some cardio.
Yes.
You know, maybe you're on your deck and you walk back and forth on your deck. Or we have a lot of people that like to go to our former malls and walk around there. Mm-hmm. That's great exercise.
Absolutely. And I just actually talked to a lady yesterday. She, you know, is experiencing some balance and strength issues. Mm-hmm. And she's that fear of falling. So when you have that fear of falling, you tend to sit more, right? So mm-hmm. when you sit more, you lose even more. So encouraging people to, even if they have to get out with a walker, or getting out with a cane, just to keep that activity is just so important.
And you deserve it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep coming back to this whenever we talk and we have these discussions. Our seniors, they're trailblazers. They're people that, you know, have done so much in this, for society, for work. You yep. deserve to enjoy these latter years.
Yep.
And as healthy as can be.
Yep, absolutely.
So are there other things, too?
Yeah, so just, again, talking with your doctor and your pharmacist about your medications and know why you're taking them. So often we hear people on different medications and they're not quite sure why they're prescribed those medications. So I always encourage people to write those down, write the doctor why you're taking it, how often you're taking it, and then note some of those side effects. So as you probably know and I know, you know, some medications can... I've experienced like dizziness or lightheadedness. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we've all had some of those side effects. So just making sure that you're letting your doctor or pharmacist know about that.
And a good doctor wants you to ask those questions. Mm-hmm. A good doctor has no problem with your concerns, with your issue, you know, your questions that you have. They want to answer them.
Yep. And it could be something as simple as a medication dose change or... Mm. You know, there might be another medication that they can supplement in place of. So, yeah, asking those questions.
It might even be how to say the medication. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that might even be a thing. Some right. of those medications, though, I don't know how to say some of those words.
Yeah.
I
get that, yeah.
But now, one of the things that we have coming up to really help with this, not only a great conversation like we're having, Jennifer, but a great class that you have coming up, mm-hmm. Stepping On.
Yep, so Stepping On is a program. We've offered it for a long time here in the Rapids area. But it's a fall prevention program. It's evidence-based, so it's been proven to work for people that kind mm-hmm. of go through the entire program and practice the things that we talk about. But it's really kind of proven to reduce fall risk. So one of the cool things about the program is we do invite some different guest experts throughout the community in to touch on topics like strength and balance. Mm-hmm. So we have a physical therapist that comes in three different times during the program to talk about which strength and balance exercises they can do to help with that. Mm. A lot of people don't actually realize that they can improve their balance. That's one thing that I get all the time is, well, you know, your balance is gone. There's nothing you can do about it, and that's kind of a myth. And then we do bring in an optometrist, so a vision expert to talk about eye-related conditions as people get older and making sure people are getting those regular vision checks. A pharmacist does come in and talks about those high-risk medications. Oftentimes, sleep aids are another one that we tend to see people on that can increase risk, so that pharmacist is just there to talk about those medications and make sure that you're having those conversations with your doctor. And then we do bring in a member of the police department or fire department to really kind of talk more about those community type hazards. So things when we're out and about in the community, navigating curbs, sidewalks, areas where it might be safer to cross the street, or, you know, just some of those when we're out and about in the community type conversations.
What I love, really enjoy about our conversations, again, we're speaking with Jennifer Clark from the ADRC. The overall conversation, no matter where you're listening to us, whether it's in Wisconsin or outside of, or in this central Wisconsin area or outside of that, it's very helpful, and you can apply it to your life. The Stepping On class feels a little more specific, a little more like local. And I was so curious about that part of things, too, where how much these things in the risks, is it more, do you have more risk of this up in northern Wisconsin than you do in southern and that? And while we don't maybe have numbers for those kind of things, we do know, like you touched on, that this class here in central Wisconsin is vital. It has helped so many people over the years. There's a reason you keep doing it.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. We see many people go through the program every year, and sometimes multiple people that are the same people that go through the program multiple times. So,
and obviously not looking for stats that you could never have, but do you, in your job, do you hear or see a difference? Like, oh, this is more of an issue up north, or this is more of an issue here in central Wisconsin, certain types of falls or anything. Yeah. There's more of this here than there is there.
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. You know, obviously winter months, I just think of like, are probably, you know, we tend to get more snow up in the northern area of Wisconsin than we do down in the southern, but...
You know, with rural areas where you don't have as much, you know, city shoveling and that kind of thing,
I
wonder if there might be more there or not. It's just something to get people to think about if you are in one of these positions, because it's no different than if you're a city, if you're in Madison or something listening to us, you have similar issues there where it's more so about getting around town. It can be a little more difficult maybe.
Yeah. And I just think, too, like even out in rural communities, like a lack of... access to services all the time. Yeah. So, you know, maybe a lack of physical activity opportunities in that community. So even more important why we should maybe be doing some things at home versus...
Absolutely. You know. And why it's so important for your neighbors to be checking on neighbors and keeping an eye out for, and especially in rural communities. Not to say you don't need to do this in cities too, but in rural communities, it makes it that much more important that you're checking in on your neighbors, that you know how so-and-so is doing and how they are. Because one of the things that I think is the most scary part about the fall, it goes back to one of the more earlier kind of commercials we remember and one of the more earlier fears we have of the idea of falling and there's nobody around.
Yeah. We don't often realize, and I like how you pointed out just the rural, in the rural communities, that being so important, that our neighbors are really our lifelines.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you notice a neighbor's curtains aren't drawn in the morning, that may be signaling an issue, you know, that there's something going on. I think, you know, those neighbors are so important, especially when we live out, they're important in town too, but like, especially when we're out in the community or out in the rural parts of, you know, our community, that becomes even more important.
And we're raised in society to not eavesdrop, to not look into people's houses and things like that. This is one of those scenarios where it's okay to peek. It's okay to glance over there. That was a great note about the curtains.
Yes.
Even something as simple as that. And say you knock on the door and, oh, I just forgot to do it. Well, that's great. That's fine. I have a hard time believing that person's going to mind you not checking in on them, even if they're okay. It's better than not checking.
And we've had people to you know, make a friend with your neighbor and make that plan, have that plan in place that you do check on each other every so often, so that you know, both know, you know, when something's going on.
You mentioned having our police department or fire departments a part of these conversations, and a big shout out and thank you to them for taking the time to do this and everything. With the fire department, I found that very interesting, some of our pre-conversation.
Yeah.
Because again, one of those things I don't think we think about very often. While our firefighters, we think right away with fire, they're also one of the first calls, if not the call that's made in this situation.
Right. Yeah, they do actually, I've been working with them quite a lot this year on a pilot project, but their call volume for falls is just astronomical. They do take quite a few calls. Some of them obviously are just individuals needing some help to get up off the ground. Others are, you know, much more serious where they need to be transported. But yeah, they do take quite a few calls.
If people are not able to participate as a part of the classes, a part of the stepping on classes, are there other ways to reach out to get information about this, to get some help possibly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, feel free to call the ADRC at any time. I do have, I'm happy to talk on the phone with people about, you know, their fall risk and, you know, things that they can do to maintain their independence in their homes or, you know, prevent a fall from happening out in the community, that kind of thing. Always happy to talk with people.
One of the things I love about talking with you all at the ADRC is I even if I don't know something, I know enough to know they probably got this.
Yeah.
I feel like I know the answer
to
that question.
Or we'll figure it out, right?
Yeah. But that's just it. It's not a place that you get treated like a number, or you get treated as you come in and you tell them, I have trouble with this, and they just give you a generic cookie-cutter answer. You guys are going to work with the individual. I've heard from so many people that have talked to the ADRC over the last 20 years I've lived here and everything, and I don't even have a number of how many people I've talked to that you all have helped. It's really impressive. It's really appreciated.
Every person's situation is just so different. So, it's...
Another thing that I appreciate, too, that you've touched on a little bit here and there and such is the act of how important it can be to have some dignity in this subject and be able to stay in the own home if you were able to. And the it's like, it's one thing in your own head to be worrying about, man, I don't want a fall to take me out. Some of the people we're talking about survived world wars, survived Vietnam or these things. And I can see where the fear of, man, and I fall and that takes me out, a fall. Right. Like, so there's this shame that almost kicks in, this fear, even a little bit of guilt that can come and kick in. And to be able to talk to another human being about that stuff, to know that you're in a safe area, that it's okay to be vulnerable, it's okay to share this stuff, you're not alone. Anybody else in your age range is probably worrying about the same thing.
Yep.
Just in general, that alone can be a godsend, can mm-hmm. be such a gift. And I'm sure not something that it gets lost on you or your clients at times.
Yeah. It is a hard topic for people to talk about. Like you said, it's hard to say I'm losing my independence or, mm-hmm. you know, but... You know, so often I feel there are things that can be done. And that's what we're here for, is to kind of help point those things out, things that we can do to then keep you in the community, safe at home. There's lots that we can, lots of resources available and things that we can do to help.
When is the Stepping On program again?
So Stepping On is on Wednesdays, beginning October 4th through November 15th. We'll be offering that from 10 a.m. to noon at the Aging and Disability Resource Center. So if people are interested in registering for that program, pre-registration is required. They can call our 1-800 number or our local office number. I don't have our local office number on hand, but I do have our 800 number, is 888-486-9545, and they can get you pointed in the right direction.
Encourage you to do that, everybody. Reach out to the ADRC and register for this class, especially if you are in need of it. But I would also suggest, if you're a caregiver, mm-hmm. it's not a bad idea. I'm in a situation like that, and now just talking with you, kind of realize, well, Jennifer's hit on some things I didn't know about here. I should probably know about. Is it available to caregivers as well to take?
It is open to anybody. I also like to just point out that this is a prevention program, so you don't have to have had a fall
yes.
to go through the program. You know, we're really trying to prevent those from happening. But with that being said, you know, a lot of people that do come in have had falls or experienced falls or had a loved one that has fallen. So, you know, we're here to offer some information and advice for, you know, people that have fallen too, mm-hmm. In hopes that we can prevent another fall from happening.
As we're wrapping up, Jennifer, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about volunteering availabilities over at the ADRC. There's just wonderful ways for you to put back in your community over there. I think of Meals on Wheels right away. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a topic with you guys, as soon as I see ADRC, I think of Meals on Wheels. there's things like that.
Yeah. Yep. So we do really always in need of volunteers for our Meals on Wheels program or our meals program in general, whether that be Meals on Wheels, driving and delivering a hot meal to those that are homebound in the community, to working in our kitchen at our meal site. So, and that could be packaging and serving and all of those things. So as far as the, you know, if you're interested, delivering meals could look... We have some volunteers that do it once a week. We have other volunteers that want to do it on an as-needed basis, kind of fill in. Mm-hmm. They do it monthly. So we really do work with people's schedules, you know, and look at what they are willing to provide and can provide.
I've used this example before, but when I was out in California doing this, I couldn't have had a weirder schedule. I was filming a TV show, so mm-hmm. it's all over the map, and I'm working, you know, 12-hour blocks, and I didn't really feel like I'd be able to help much, but sure. I wanted to try, and I had the time. And sure enough, right away, oh, no, we can work with that. Like, and that was out in California. It's no different here.
Right.
If you have a weird schedule, you think, oh, that could never work, we'll find a way to make it work.
Absolutely, yeah.
There are, and to the point of the need of this, no matter who you are, where you're listening to us or anything here in the Central Wisconsin area, there is probably a family or a client nearby that could use that meal. Mm-hmm. And it just works out that, hey, they're like 10 minutes away or they're 5 minutes away. I could do that on my lunch break. I could do that easily. I don't have any problem dropping that off. And yes, you are bringing them a hot meal that is very important, and that we all know and understand the importance of the body and eating. you're also checking in.
Yeah, it is a well check for sure. You know, some of those people that are Meals on Wheels drivers are the only people they see every day. So that just means a lot to our Meals on Wheels customers when they can see that friendly face every day dropping off a hot meal.
And if I could say this too, in a day and age where there's this concern over the younger generations and empathy and their heads and tablets and these things, which is a little silly because they worried about us too, Jennifer, but you know, I digress. When it comes to that, and if you're a young person getting ready to go to college or something and you're looking to fill out your college resume, one of the greatest things you can have on there is Meals on Wheels. I know this for a fact. College, they look for that stuff. They love that kind of thing. So not only are you putting back into your community, you're going to get some great stories and some good feelings out of this because the clients that you're working with are going to have great stories. I guarantee it. But it's going to look great on that college resume too. And it creates this empathy in younger people that you almost can't help. I'm a positive of it. I put my name on it.
Yeah.
Are there other volunteer opportunities or things that you're looking for over there?
I mean, we're always looking for office help. So if you have some office experience and you like to, put letter, mailings and things together, we certainly have, ways that we can get people involved. Stepping on is another huge need. So I just talked about the Stepping On program. We do utilize volunteers in that role too as facilitators. So if you have a background in teaching or like to kind of do some group work, always happy to talk about how to get involved with the programs as well.
Always happy to talk with you, Jennifer. Thank you very much for the time. Say hi to the team over there for us.
I will do that. Thank you so much.
You can find out more by going to adrc-cw.org. That is the website, adrc-cw.org. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine coming up on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Thank you for listening to your local civic media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. While summer is winding down, we still have more than 80 road construction projects underway in northwest Wisconsin alone. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation held a meeting in Eau Claire with the Wisconsin County Highway Association to promote safety in work zones. More than 2,000 crashes were recorded in Wisconsin work zones in 2022, which resulted in 8 deaths and more than 650 injuries. Cell phone use is one of the most common factors in distracted driving crashes. Please put down the phone, obey posted speed limits, and move over or slow down around workers and vehicles with flashing lights along the highway. The First Baptist Church in Wisconsin Rapids is holding their church picnic tomorrow, August 26th, from 11:30 to 3:30. They are located at 910 McKinley Street. They have food, bingo games with prizes, kid games, and live music by Matthew Renner. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight, otherwise partly cloudy skies. Lows level off around 58, winds out of the north 5 to 10 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 75. Tomorrow, cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Clear skies. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 48. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 85.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this August 25th, 2023. I have your host, James, here, and I am joined right now by a couple of our favorite people. We're going to talk about the new school year with our good friend, Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent. Craig, good to see you.
Good morning.
I appreciate you being here. And you brought in a friend. We have Roxanne Filtz with us. Did I get that right, Roxanne?
Yes, you did.
Oh, I love your name. I want to make sure I get it right. It's good
you.
To see you again. Thanks a lot for being here.
Roxanne,
Craig, we have school starting like right around the corner here. Got a lot to talk about. I thought we could focus and get into the curriculum and the all the layers to that. But it's a big topic. Where do you want to start with that?
Yeah, well, I think I'll just point out that what we are wrapping up, and I'll turn it over to Roxy to get into some of the specifics, but what we're wrapping up this week is new staff orientation. So that is incorporated under the curriculum instruction umbrella. And then, of course, Monday is when all staff return, and we have a handful of days of in-service and professional development prior to the start of school year for kids. And so I think the understanding of all of the things that go into prepping for a new school year As well as what falls under that curriculum instruction umbrella is an excellent topic for Roxy to share some thoughts on.
Yeah, Roxanne, all of us, at one way or another, know what it's like the first day of school or starting, you know, going from graded school to high school or these kind of things. Most of us don't know what it's like for teachers the start of the new school year.
That's correct. We have 34 new teachers that are starting. Some are new to the profession, some are fresh out of college, and some have years of experience that are just moving to the Rapids District to teach for the first time. So we've had 34 involved in a week-long orientation, very excited. They've been an awesome audience, and we cover everything from curriculum to insurance to human resources to what to expect when you get in your buildings. We spend a day and a half in the buildings so that they get comfortable with what they're going to be working with, where their supplies are, where their room is, where should they park, all of those things. So it's been a great experience this last past week with them.
What is new for our teachers this year when coming into it?
For the teachers in general?
For the teachers in general, yeah.
Well, basically, on a physical level, there's going to be new playgrounds put in each of our different schools that we're going to be able to do some outdoor learning spaces with our students. It expands the learning more from just being in the four walls of the classroom to other places. We have adopted a brand new health curriculum that went through the curriculum adoption process last year. We are working on our secondary FIED acquisition, which means we've purchased all of our new material and equipment for secondary FIED 612, so that's going to be implemented this next year. And last year we did the formal adoption of our new 912 science curriculum and pieces. So that'll be new for the teachers when they're coming in. Our whole curriculum adoption process is a long process. Every 10 years we go through a rotation of our major curricular areas. And part of the adoption means that the teachers go through their curriculum maps. They look to see if there's any holes or gaps in the things that they're teaching as they align to state standards and what our standards are. We're constantly changing to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our students and our families. And as we all know, students and families' needs change every year. So we want to make sure that we're staying on top of those things. We want to stay on top of best practice. We do a lot of research. And then we have a curriculum committee that goes through and pilots materials for at least a year so we get different views of what it is that we want to bring to the classroom. And the final and most important piece is we do a parent review of anything that we're going to purchase, and curriculum goes through a parent review where we have an open house where the parents can come in, look, ask questions. Everything's out there in the open. It's transparent. We go through what's called our Curriculum for Instructional Improvement Committee, and they ask tough questions before we even take our curriculum to the board for approval, just to make sure that we are doing our job in representing what it is that we want to teach our students.
What kind of questions have you been getting recently or in the last year or so from parents?
There's a lot of questions concerning our...
It's a loaded question.
It's a very loaded question.
I know.
And the questions, I mean, I appreciate the questions that are being asked because we have nothing to hide. Our curriculum is transparent. Anybody can come in and look at what we teach. It's an open book. So if anybody has any questions about anything, they can actually come in. A lot of questions around, you know, our human growth and development in our health curriculum, that's part of the deal. What we're reading at Lincoln High School, what kind of books we're reading, a lot of questions about how we're representing a wide variety of authors in what it is that we're reading, what's assigned reading and what is optional reading. We are getting a lot of compliments about the new science wing at Lincoln High School, the fact that it's really been in-depth and is really giving a great learning experience for our students at Lincoln High School. I think that a lot of people in the public don't understand that, you know, we have aviation classes at Lincoln High School where students can decide if they want to be, you know, commercial pilots. We have a in-house health, like a central health classes where students can graduate with a CNA degree if they want. A lot of people may not realize that we have our construction classes actually build a house. And we learned yesterday that the house that was built last year was almost $500,000. And that was, you know, led by student builders. You know, they have subcontractors and things like that. There are so many great things that are going on in curriculum that it's sometimes overlooked when there's something controversial that comes up that we don't get to see the really good things that are going on.
I'll just jump in and say too, because I think this is an excellent time to emphasize this. So It's not atypical that there's parent involvement and opportunities at review in school districts, but frankly, here at, in Wisconsin Rapids, we take it to the nth degree. I mean, we're not doing anything under the cover of darkness, right? And I think if you have kids in school, you know. If you don't, then clearly it's harder to get your mind around what may or may not be going on, right? So when there's topics that are considered controversial or something like that, in most cases, what I'm finding here locally is that these things aren't really happening. Clearly, I recently had a question about, you know, what are you teaching in terms of gender identity, which is kind of a hot button topic. And frankly, we're not teaching anything in terms of gender identity. It's not really a curricular topic that's covered. Does the subject come up on occasion? Well, I would imagine, you know. However, this idea that we're somehow teaching kids to be transgendered or something like that is flatly false. And if you don't have kids in school, you might think, well, yeah, that must be going on because I'm hearing so much about it in this national narrative. So what I would point back to is, you know, we're a microcosm of a broader society in a public school setting, particularly when you have right around 5,000 students, right? So we serve all students. That's one of the benchmarks or hallmarks of public education, which is frankly one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about it, because I believe every kid deserves a chance at getting a decent education, and that's what we stand for. But nonetheless, we still ensure that parents retain all of the rights that parents, in fact, should have, and that is to direct the education and upbringing of their own kids. But keep in mind that that doesn't mean you get to direct the education and upbringing of other people's kids, right? So we're in that delicate balance. But to cater to that, one of the things that we do is allow for parent review of curriculum. With human growth and development curriculum, ironically, there is an ability for parents to opt out if there's things that you think are controversial or that you don't want your kids to be exposed to. Here again, we're not talking explicitly about gender identity. That's not really part of human growth and development, right?
Right, right.
And so it's those aspects in incorporating where if we know, if you're a parent and you have kids in school, you should know, or you absolutely have access to, whether or not you, you know, uptake that information is on you, to engage and find out more. And the truth, the same thing is true for community members. If just out of curiosity, you would like to review curriculum, clearly we can coordinate that, and you have that opportunity. And that is, I think, further evidence of the fact that we're doing what we think is best for kids and trying to meet the needs of all kids that we serve.
I tell myself whenever we get together, Craig, I'm not going to do this, and I can't help it every time I get emotional when these topics come up. For one, as somebody who's dealt with anti-Semitism, racism my whole dang life, I will tell you that most people fear what they don't know. And once they get to know you, once they talk to you, they realize, oh, you're just like me. And that's what I've been trying to tell you. It's very similar to this. Whether you have kids in school or you don't, ask questions. That's how you get the answers. You can tell the people that don't, that they just want to bark, because they don't ask questions. They're just there to bark. That's it. And as somebody who, growing up, I love learning. I love learning. I don't care what the subject is. I love learning about it. My brain can't get enough of it. But in school, I finally come out here and I get a chance to just be a learner. I don't have to worry about watching my back every 5 seconds like in Chicago and everything, like an inner city kid to do. I'm getting emotional. Sorry. I come here and I'm excited about history. I want to learn about history. I want to know about my people. I want to learn about Jews. I want to learn about the Holocaust. I want to learn about Italians and these things. And we get going and nothing. Nothing. We never even talked about it. It wasn't until high school that the Holocaust came up. Like, these kind of things. This stuff matters. It's not just representing for people like myself so that we actually feel like we're a part of this country. We're a part of this whole thing that we're doing here, this wonderful experiment. But it's also important for the kids that are growing up that are the opposite of me, to create that empathy, to create that understanding of world history, so we don't not only repeat these things, but that we can learn from the trailblazers and the people that got us here. If you really love this country, if you're a real proud American, you want this stuff happening in your schools, because this is our history. This is our world.
And also,
let me get off my soapbox.
No, that's, and if students can't see themselves in the literature that they read or in the history that they study, why would they be interested? Yeah. You know, education is your way out of poverty. Education is your way, your success in life. Learning, you need to be a lifelong learner. And if you can't identify with what it is that's being taught. If it's all being taught from one viewpoint and you're never exposed to anything else, how are you learning and growing? And that's a passion of mine as well. Mm-hmm.
The other piece that I toss in there, and I adamantly agree with you, James, is the idea that I think some of these things that are quote unquote controversial are not for kids. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Like, yes.
Kids are just like, yeah, so what? I mean, mm-hmm. it is what. I don't care if you're Jewish. You're cool. I like you. You know, and
couldn't
so
care less. Yeah.
Right. And so that those elements that tend to seep their way in, particularly on these national narratives, are stirring the pot for whatever reason that ulterior motive is to make those things happen. You don't really see that playing out, at least in our schools, right? Kids kind of get it. Clearly, our approach and focus, particularly with social emotional learning, and I know that. There's a narrative out there that's about indoctrinating kids into communism or whatever the heck the nonsense is there. But ultimately what it comes down to is what you mentioned. And frankly, the community that we want to live in and what we hold ourselves to and what we hold our attempt to hold our students to is one of tolerance, right? Where I have the ability to do the things that I want to do and get my needs met. Not at the cost of yours, mm-hmm. and vice versa, right? I mean, ultimately, that's the foundation of a functional society. And that's not to say that you have to agree mm-hmm. or support everything that someone else does, but just frankly tolerate it.
Yeah.
Because most of this stuff doesn't impact other people to a huge degree, right? Yeah. And I always go back, like, when we talk about this conversation regarding these sorts of things, I go back to, like, in my high school days, punk was a thing, mm-hmm. right? And so it'll date me a little bit. I started high school in 88 and graduated in 92. And so that'll give you a little bit of that time frame. And there was a couple of students in my high school, local, Eastern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So not, you know, I'm not talking about New York or Chicago. And there's a couple of students that were, I mean, they brought this to another level, you know, spikes and leather and mohawk and shaved head, like legitimate mohawk.
Yeah.
82 colors.
Yes.
It was wild, you know, it was absolutely wild. And what's interesting about that approach is just like back then in 88, 89, 90, whatever it was, the kids really didn't care. They're like, oh, hey, one gal was Lynn. I'll never forget. It's like, hey, Lynn, how's it going? Oh, good. And she was a super nice kid.
Yeah.
But did that get some looks? Well, yeah, absolutely. And so there's always these things that ebb and flow in society. And there's, you know, particularly kids of certain ages and humans of certain ages mm-hmm. engage in behaviors that explore and do different things. And frankly, that's part of the richness of society. And we can look around and see these different things kind of happening. Tying back to the curriculum, the point is that we're not doing anything that we're trying to hide. Nothing is being hidden. Parents have opportunity to engage and learn more if you have kids in the system. If you don't have kids in the system and you want to learn more, you can talk to Roxy or myself or other individuals in the school, and we're more than happy to explain some of these things to you.
As a matter of fact, we have our Council for Instructional Improvement, and we have three parent reps on that council, and they serve three-year terms. And this year, we have one term that's up, so I've been taking applications until 3 o'clock this afternoon, and I've had 24 requests for applications, and as of right before we came on the air, I had 9 returned of parents that are genuinely interested in supporting the curriculum, wanting to know what the curriculum is, and having a seat at the table to just ask the tough questions. And we have to be prepared to answer those tough questions. And like I said, what we're doing is very transparent. We have nothing to hide. I'm very proud of the work that we've done in Wisconsin Rapids with our curriculum and with helping our students and our teachers.
If people want to be a part of that still, can they still send an application? You said until like 3 o'clock
today?
Yes,
they can still request an application.
By the time this is played.
The time this is played, probably not. So it's been out there. We've advertised it on social media. It's been out there for two weeks. It's been on the school webpage. And I said I've had 24 requests, you know, for applications, and 9 have been returned completed.
I feel for you all in this system. I can't think of anything more important in society than education. And one of the greatest things we do as human beings is passing down information. You got enough on your plates to have to deal with these kind of stuff as well is unnecessary and a shot in the foot. It's shooting ourselves in the foot when we don't need to. And it's also, I don't want to just focus on that, though, because there are so many parents out there that are so supportive of all this and so engaged in this. And you mentioned the opportunity to be able to be literally engaged with these classes and finding out more. I believe that there is more good than bad out there by far and away, especially in this area.
No question.
Absolutely agree with you.
No question.
When it comes to Act 20, I want to get into that a little bit with you both. Where can we start with that?
Well, I'll just launch by for the background for listeners to say that Act 20 was incorporated into the recent biennial budget approval. And so for those that are not familiar, generally what it's being described as is kind of the science of reading legislation mm-hmm. here in the state of Wisconsin. And so that can take on several different permutations, but generally it's talking about evaluating and implementing a more holistic approach to early language acquisition and ensuring that things like phonics and so forth from the old days remains included, as well as some of the things from the new days. And Roxy can give you some more specific details about that.
Yeah.
In particular, the Act is Act 20 is requiring that schools will adopt a new early reading curriculum that has been approved by the state. So we're waiting for guidance on the state's level yet. The new curriculum will be it'll be implemented in the 24-25 school year. So it'll be the beginning of the 24-25 school year. And it's going to be based on the science of reading. Now, there's pros and cons on both sides of how reading is taught. My personal belief is that we have to meet somewhere in the middle, because not all students learn the same. You can have a room of 20 kids, and they are not going to learn in the same way. Mm-hmm. So we have to be able to figure out, as teachers, as professionals, how does student A learn, how does student B learn, and to meet their needs. We can't just put them all in the same basket and say, okay, this is the be-all, end-all way to teach something. Mm-hmm. And we can't ignore the way any of them learn. So we want to be able to find that balance. We are fortunate in a way with Act 20 coming when it did for the timing purposes, because we're approaching our English language arts K-5 acquisition, which is a 10-year rotation.
Yeah.
So it's not like we just purchased all kinds of materials last year that we won't be able to use. We're going to be able to go through our process, our curriculum process, and meet the requirements of the state at the same time.
Oh, that's cool.
It is. That part, we were very fortunate. I would have hated to have been one of the districts that might have just invested a lot in something and now they won't be able to use it.
Keep in mind, though, it's not required, because Wisconsin is a local control state. So what it is recommended. What they're going to do is develop a list of recommended ELA and early literacy curricula, which you would have the opportunity at selecting from. And then what I'm understanding, too, is that there's likely some grants associated with that would actually buy down the cost, if not the entire cost, for the district that districts choose to implement that. Additionally, we will still follow what our own protocols are internally and then rely heavily on, I would assume, this newly generated list and curricula, and follow a similar process in which our people are still going to evaluate it. We're going to pilot, opportunities. We're going to ensure that as a balanced approach and hopefully can identify that it's going to meet the needs of the majority, if not all of our kids, right off the bat. So there's a number of things in this moving part, but I just wanted to emphasize this is not a mandate. So the state is not telling you this is the ELA curriculum you must teach.
Correct.
I don't think we'll see that in the state of Wisconsin. That's not true elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But having a repository of, hey, these have been vetted, and we know that these will do the job in our opinion, and now here you can help select from those in order to implement in your own district, makes life a lot easier in that regard, because I'm sure you're not shocked to find there is a litany of possibilities out there in terms of ELA and reading instruction.
It's important to let people be able to make those decisions, too, not just with parents, but with teachers, where you guys are going to have a better understanding than the people that are sending this information, possibly.
That's true. And it also saves the autonomy of teachers to do what they are best at, and that's understanding who their kids are and how where their strengths are in teaching. So it allows for that as well.
It also feels like, and this is kind of a side question, but you mentioned how every kid learns differently. You got 20 kids, almost every one of them is going to learn differently. It feels like our system is doing a better job of applying to that.
I would absolutely agree.
Okay. It feels that way. That's great to hear.
It does. And it's not as simple as just having students sit in a desk for 45 minutes in this class, then sit in a desk 45 minutes in another class. Our kids are used to screen time. They're used to being mobile. Kids learn better if they're moving, if they're walking around, if they're making noise. A noisy classroom doesn't mean that there's not any learning that goes on in that classroom. There's probably a lot of learning that's going on in that classroom, and kids are able to socialize with each other, which they don't do enough of. They need to be able to talk. They need to be able to see each other, and I think that our teachers are so good at knowing what strengths lie in front of them, and they take advantage of that with their kids.
Yeah. Was there anything else about Act 20 that you wanted to touch on?
We're working on the professional development part of it. We want to make sure that we're prepared or as well prepared as we can be. Some of our teachers have done letters training, which is one of the curricular pieces that the state is looking at as possibly being on that list. So we're ahead of the game as well. We have one teacher that is becoming dyslexia certified. So she's working on getting her certification so she can bring her information back and work with our reading interventionists on being able to identify dyslexia earlier in our students and the things that we can do for that. So we've been very proactive in making sure that we have the resources available to us to move forward as best we can.
I was diagnosed with a minor dyslexia at 31. And I remember looking at the doctor and telling him, like, how does this develop this late in life and everything? And I felt foolish as I was saying, because as I'm saying it, I'm realizing, wait a minute, no, I probably have had this my whole life. I just didn't even know. Right. That is so wonderful to hear, Roxanne. That's great.
Right. We're working on anything that we can. I mean, I am very proud of our district and the amount of professional development that we offer to our staff and amongst each other. For instance, at our opening in-service, we have a guest speaker who is going to be presenting to us by the name of John O'Leary. And he is going to... he's going to provide a message of you need to be able to live your life engaged. You need to be able to control what you can control and do the best at what you can do with what's in front of you and come to work every day and show up. Show up for the kids, show up for yourself, show up for who you are and what you want to be and just live your life to the fullest and live inspired and be engaged. And I'm looking so forward to the message that we've invited the entire staff. We're talking anywhere. The importance of a Noonaid and Craig in the life of a child is exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, the bus driver is the first person that some of those students see in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, that relationship, that building from the very beginning of the day to when those kiddos go home at night, and whether they're 6 or they're 16, doesn't matter. We need to make sure that as professionals in education, we've come into education for a reason, and let's remember what that reason is, and let's get back to that. Let's get back to enjoying every minute that we have in our careers.
Very well said. I wish I didn't have 2 more minutes. I could have just ended right there. That was really good, Roxanne.
I'll put a plug in, though, because, and James, you probably want to read this book. Over the last 6 years, we've gotten to know each other fairly well, and I think you'd enjoy it quite a bit. John O'Leary is the author, and so it's spelled like you think it would, O'Leary.
Yeah, great author.
And his book is On Fire, is what it's called. That's the one you want to look for. There's another one, I think it's called In Awe.
In Awe, yeah.
Oh, that one I know. I've heard that one.
That's getting back to your childlike way of looking at things.
So start with On Fire. It's I like it because, well, you know me well enough to know I'm not kind of a rainbows and unicorns kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
And it's not that. It's not this hokey nonsense, you know, just wake up and smile and everything's great. You know, it's not that. But the most profound impact for me was this idea that it is ultimately in your control, right? And there's an excellent quote in there. I'm not going to remember it, but basically it is you can't always choose the path that you walk in life, but you can choose the way in which you walk it. It's something like that. And that encapsulates exactly what the most profound, and again, this was to me. Someone else might read it and see something else in that regard. But that does help you recognize from your own personal mindset, right, that it's my choice, right? Yeah. I can choose to be upset and negative, or I can choose to utilize things that might create negativity or poor self-talk to a learning experience and use that to build myself for whatever the next battle or hurdle might be.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's those aspects that were profound, but it is very pragmatic and rational in how it's delivered.
I love a new book recommendation. Thank you very much, sir. It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, Maya Angelou, that I can't help what happens to me, but I can help how I react to it.
Correct.
Absolutely.
It's really good. That's a good one, man. I wanted to wrap up making sure that we remind everybody to be safe out there, keep an eye out for our kids, keep an eye on the little guys, little girls going to be running around, and we can't expect them to be thinking like adults. We have to be the adults in these situations. Be on the lookout for our kids. Be on the lookout for our bus drivers, our bus buses. Craig, are we in need of bus drivers still?
Absolutely. So Lamers and Safeway are the two contractors that we work with that are located locally here. And you can reach out to either of them directly. If you're having troubles with that, you can reach out to me and we'll get you connected. But yes, if there's sports routes, regular bus routes. In fact, we run vans. That's actually through the district. If you're interested, you don't want to get a CDL or a bus driver's license, and you want to just drive a van, we can assist in that regard. So, yeah, anyone that's interested in terms of transportation would be more than welcome to fill out an application and get moving.
Thank you for everything you do for our community. Thank you for hanging out with me for a little while here and talking and getting our audience ready for the school year as well. Appreciate both of you and everything you do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more by going to WRPS.org. That's WRPS.org. We will have more Midday Magazine for you next week right here at WFHR.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan is urging residents to help thy neighbors cleaning up after severe weather that hit the city.
If you've got a neighbor who had a tree fall, they're seniors, they're disabled, they just don't have the ability to cut the tree up and get it out to the front yard. This is the time for Detroiters to pitch in with your neighbors. You get it to the curb, we'll haul it away. But if you've got neighbors who can't get it to the curb, give them a hand.
The city expects it will take about 3 weeks to clean up debris from the storms, less if everyone pulls together. Hundreds